You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything. Well, I want to welcome everybody to the CPC Together podcast, and we have a very special episode today. We have the normal, boring Brandon and Rachel in here.
Womp womp.
Yeah, so you might be thinking, why on earth would I ever listen to this again? But we've replaced Kevin and Nico with Fred and Anastasia Naff. Am I saying your name right, Anastasia? I always have a complex about Anastasia. I feel like Americans would say Anastasia.
Don't say that, please.
No, don't say that.
It sounds
but
like a
Anastasia. Sounds good.
Anastasia.
Yes.
Anastasia.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's okay.
Anyway, they are our mission partners, and actually our very first mission partner that was sent out from CPC, right?
I was, yes.
How long ago was that, Fred?
Oh, 18, how long ago? It was actually 1985.
Rachel, how old were you then?
I was negative 11.
-11. Wow.
I was not a thought.
I was
on
two.
My parents' mind.
I was 2 years old.
Oh, you were two? You were negative 11? Oh, you were two.
I was two.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Wow. So that was before Mark Mitchell started as the...
Yeah, Jeff Farrar was pastor.
Wow.
And then they called Mark to be assistant pastor. And then he got rid of Jeff. I mean, then took over for Jeff. Yeah.
Wow. How did it come to be that can you tell us a little bit about your journey? Like, how did it come that CPC sent you as a mission partner?
Well, let's see. I was born at 1:38 in the morning.
Yes.
It was a Tuesday.
This is exactly the detail that I was looking for.
It was about 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wait, which hospital?
Mills Hospital, okay. San Mateo, yeah. California. The plaque. Wow. They took down the plaque, but anyway. No. I had gone to Italy as a student due to my last year of study architecture in Florence through the California State University system, and got to know a couple with InterVarsity, and they were having a summer evangelism team go to a town between Florence and Rome called Perugia that had many, many foreign students. So I was there for the summer and saw the huge opportunities. I mean, about 60,000 students in a town of about 100,000.
Wow.
Because they have a university where students can learn Italian language and culture. So all these opportunities, there were a few missionaries there, but most of them were in language study. So they're told not to do ministry until they learn the language. And finished the summer there, then came back here, was working for a couple architects in the area. And then the Lord really put it on my heart to go back to Italy. But I had to spend the evening with a guy I was co-leading a community group with to see if I really wanted to go to Italy to serve the Lord or just because I love the country so much. And after talking, he felt it really was the Lord's calling. So I applied with InterVarsity to do a 2-year stint there. And under the leadership of this fellow in Florence, now the amazing thing was another person who was involved in this with this couple in Florence was a guy from Ghana, Albert Puplampu, who had gone to Italy to study, get his master's in fine arts and then go back to Ghana and teach painting. And he had sensed the calling to go to Perugia also. And one day he was walking to this couple's apartment to get his mail and thought, gee, I'm going to Perugia to serve in ministry. I wish Fred was going to be there to serve with me. Because we had co-led some studies and things. He gets there. There's a letter from me telling this couple that I have decided to apply to InterVarsity to go to Perugia to do ministry.
So in his head, he just was thinking, man, I wish Fred.
Yeah, he would think, I wish I had some help, someone to work with me. We got along very well. We really complimented each other. He was really had an African mentality of, you know, people matter, not schedules. Mm-hmm. I was the opposite. Schedules, of course, are important. People are, sometimes they're important. But anyway, in fact, he didn't own a wristwatch till we started serving together. So
wow.
Was that your first present to him?
No, I didn't buy it. I was too cheap. I was a missionary. Yeah, so we ended up serving there 2 years together. And yeah. Mm.
Who or what like shaped your view or idea of what missions was?
Oh, well, I was involved in what used to be called Campus Crusade crew now in college and went to their Christmas conference, and there were missionaries there who spoke, and I didn't really think it was something I wanted to do. I was so fixed on architecture, I wanted to do that. And at the time, didn't think I could do both, architecture and missions.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing a woman who had been in Africa, and she said that after 3 months, she stopped picking the bugs out of the food, and after 6 months, she started to look for more to put into the food.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. That kind of turned me off. I'm not a big bug in the food person. So anyway, I'm okay with salt and pepper, but that's about it. So anyway, so that's the strange thing. I never really had it on my heart to do missions, but then the Lord just called me so strongly to go back to Italy. And but the funny thing was, I really had this tension because I wanted to do missions, but I missed architecture. And I remember one day I was reading the local newspaper, and there was an article about a firm that in the city that was doing interesting things. And I said to Albert, hey, do you think I could go down there and, you know, spend a few hours a week just kind of volunteering and seeing what they're doing? And he just laughed and said, no, we're here to do ministry. So we didn't get to do any architecture.
But that has changed since.
Yeah, then I met this incredibly beautiful and wonderful Greek woman in Italy, moved to Greece.
That's me, by the way.
And start out teaching English to earn a living, and then was able to get a job as a draftsman working for an architect. So I was doing architecture, but I wasn't doing ministry.
Mm.
So first one, then the other. And so that was frustrating.
And how did you guys meet?
Okay, I went to Italy to study in the university there, and I started with I'm a pharmacist, and I went there to study pharmacy, and I came with this guy that Frederick was working with, and while he was preparing to come back to Perugia, I was in Perugia already, and I was following these Bible studies that they were out very close to my house. And I went there actually almost by myself. Nobody invited me because before that I was an Orthodox.
Yeah,
I was not
Greek
a believer.
Orthodox.
Greek Orthodox. And the guy that brought me to the Lord was Albert Puplumplu, that he was giving. It was this house that we will meet every Sunday afternoon, and students from the city of Perugia, they will go there. But they were not only Italians; they were from different countries, and a couple of missionaries. They were there. They were taking care of this house, and they were meeting every Sunday afternoon, and they will have this Bible study that I started to follow. Albert Puplumplu, the guy that Fred is talking about all
the
this
art
time,
teacher guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. he brought me to the Lord. So I am a Greek who went to Italy, studying pharmacy, and brought to the Lord by an African guy. What a coincidence. So easy.
God will use any means necessary, yeah.
The Lord makes miracles that sometimes our human mind doesn't capture.
So this art teacher, or I'm saying that he's probably bigger than that. You said he was like a professor in art or something.
Yeah.
You guys were both connected with him. Are you both artists, or how were you connected with this guy?
No, I was connected.
You were serving with him, but.
Yeah, but it was through the Bible study that this couple with InterVarsity was leading in Florence.
So it didn't have anything to do with art?
No, except the appreciation.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We both appreciate that, but nothing to do with art.
Yeah.
I came to know Albert through this Bible study. And afterwards, when Fred came to Italy, he came to this Bible study there. And we met in that Bible study for the first time.
Oh.
Do you guys have any of his art on the wall? I feel like you should.
We do. We have a couple of paintings.
We do.
And actually, we were hoping to visit him. He went back to Ghana finally and was teaching. And then one day he was in his office, had a very bad asthma attack, and went to be with the Lord.
Oh.
Left a wife and two small children that were born in Italy. So,
Sad.
He was a wonderful, wonderful man. So patient.
Oh.
I love his story. One time we were at another couple's house, and they had two small children. So, you know, we're having lunch, and all the kids are kind of making noise and talking, and Albert's son, Stephen, was probably five at the time, and he kept talking and talking, and Albert just looked at him calmly and said, "Stephen, how many mouths do you have?" He looked up at his dad very confused and said, "One." So Albert said, "Then how is it you can talk and eat at the same time?" Stephen just froze, didn't do either one for several minutes.
He was so patient with me. Sometimes I'm thinking when we evangelize people, like this is my what I do. I love talking to people about the Lord, and this is my gift. And sometimes we think, I had enough with this guy, probably. I don't have to continue. Or do I lose my time? Is it that enough? But I have to say, if it wasn't for the patience that this guy had, probably I would not be here right now.
Wow. Mm.
Not with the Lord, for sure. He was so patient. He would go back and forward with me all the time and open the Bible, teach me how do I have to learn so many things that he taught me with so much patience. And I don't think I have so much patience. I have patience, but in different things, totally different way of thinking that he was thinking. And I'm so pleased, though, that he was there for me.
Mm-hmm. See, Rachel, that's why you need to have more patience with me. Because you never know how God is going to use your patience in my life.
Yes.
I'll try.
Yeah, Rachel's
I'll
really
work on it.
She's typically pretty irritable and angry person, if you can't tell.
I can see that. Yeah. Behind that calm exterior, there's an irritable
There's
person.
A little flame in there.
Or maybe it's when she's around you.
You know, I never thought about that.
When she's not around you, is she irritable, if you can't see her?
I mean, I guess I don't know.
Well, there you go.
Do you know her nickname is, you're never going to guess, I'm just going to tell you, her nickname is Chili Beef.
Chili beef, like chili cold or chili like spicy?
Like spicy.
Chili like okay. spicy.
Chili spicy.
Because, because you love beef.
I do.
And your spice. This is a family nickname that they gave her.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. I've heard worse.
Spicy personality, yeah. Do you both have nicknames?
Not that we can tell anybody.
Oh. So, Anastasia, you studied pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And you are now a pharmacist.
Yes, I am. And
explain a little bit the difference between what we think of when we think pharmacy here in the States, Walgreens, versus, you know, what pharmacy is over there.
Yeah, I don't think you see any pharmacists here. That's why when I came here for the first time, his Fred's brother, he said to me, "Are you what? A pharmacist? What do you mean?" "I own a pharmacy." "Do you? You are not working in a pharmacy? What's that?" I don't understand it. The pharmacists in Greece are totally different. They're not big, like Walgreens here or something like that. So a small. There are pharmacists like this here. The small pharmacist that's not independent, that is owned by one person and other people work there. I have three assistants. And right now they are operating the pharmacy in Greece. And I am very blessed because when I am there, it's the only thing that the pharmacists here, they do probably is to prepare the drugs and that's all, and put them in the small package and give
you
it to
put you. You take them from the big bottle and you put them in the little bottle.
Right. No, we don't do that.
Oh.
Their packages are ready We give it right away, and it's when the people come in, sometimes we almost prescribe, but we don't.
Mm-hmm. You diagnose.
We diagnose. We give drugs.
Really?
Or,
so you're closer to a doctor then?
Yes. Yeah. We're actually the Greeks themselves. They say you're like my daughter, a doctor. The doctor doesn't take so much time to explain to them what they have. So they come to us and we explain everything about what they have to take care of their drugs. And the other thing is the people that they're coming in, they're all the customers are usually the same ones. So we see the same people all the time. We know them. And not only that, we spend time with them when we have time, of course. Mm. And we act like a bartender here, like a psychologist.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
That they tell us all their problems.
Wow.
Emotional problems with their families, the people that they have, that they are sick in their family, everything.
Wow.
So when they are in a situation like this, they are very vulnerable. Mm. And they open like a flower to us.
Mm.
Then my gift is to find ways always to get in and not only sell them drugs, sell the Lord. And that idea, I took it from a salesman guy, but he was a friend, very close friend of ours, that he was one day in the pharmacy with his wife, and he was seeing how I sell well everything in the pharmacy. And he turned to his wife and says, isn't that what be wonderful if we can sell the Lord like Anastasia sells drugs? And I thought, it was for me like a slap in the face. I thought, wake up. You can do that. You have the gift to sell the Lord to the people. Mm. Do it. What does obstacle you? Nothing at all. And that's what I really like.
That's incredible. You're like a doctor, pastor, evangelist at the pharmacy. Can you imagine telling your pharmacy all that stuff?
Yeah, they just ask, like, do you want a consultation? Yeah. Most people decline, and the consultation is just take this with water, take it at night, see you.
Yeah,
but not a therapy session or pastoral counseling. Yeah, wow.
Well, I've started saying my wife is an evangelist who happens to own and operate a pharmacy, because that's the most important thing to her. And she's so good at turning any conversation to spiritual things. Oh, my cell phone needs a new battery. Well, that's all it takes. Or,
you know, whatever. Several years back, I said to the Lord, I want to give you everything, all my love to you. Do whatever you like.
Mm.
And I will, whenever you want me to talk for you, to anyone, even when I am totally dead tired, I will do it.
Mm.
Please, guys, don't do that. He hears everything.
Yeah.
And he uses the way you said.
Wow.
After 24 hours being in the pharmacy one time, I was totally dead, tired. I hadn't slept all night long and all day long.
Wow.
Being in the pharmacy. And I'm ready to close the pharmacy, the door. And a girl that I knew already, she was a customer, she says to me, do you have some time for me? I said, what kind of time? My husband is dying from cancer, and I need you to come to talk to me. And I thought, I had spoken already to her about salvation, and I had spoken to her about the Lord. And she said to me, you remember all of these things that you had taught me, and you were speaking to me about salvation and all of this. I want you to tell me what's going to happen to my husband, that he's going to die. And I was there and I thought, oh Lord, not now, I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I thought, aww, whoops, do you remember a week ago, what did you pray? And that's why I'm saying, don't even think to say things that you're not meant to. Yes, that's what I do, and I do love it.
That's incredible. Mm. It reminds me of a season where it was kind of a spiritual revival at the time I least expected it. I wasn't sure I wanted to work for churches. I'd only worked for churches for a little bit. It was probably 15 years ago. And I started a different career in sales. I started mattress sales. And there's a, if you grew up here, you probably know about it, Fred. It's Mancini's Sleep World.
Oh, of course.
In San Mateo.
Yeah, of course.
So I got a job there, and at the same time, I got like a kind of a spiritual mentor, and he'd basically say, like, when you go in there, your mattress store is your mission field. Mm. So ask God to give you opportunities to talk to people that are coming in here. And I'm thinking, a mattress store? There's nothing spiritual
yes
about a mattress store. And
well, some will sleep, but all will be changed. I don't know.
Well, actually, what I started noticing, which was just crazy, is people don't replace their mattresses that often.
Mm.
Like if there's a spring popping out, they will.
Yeah, right.
But normally, they'll go in if there's some kind of a crisis. So if there's a divorce that happens, you know, I never want to sleep in that bed again. You know, I need a new mattress. Oh. Or a family member is ill, and they just want them to be comfortable, or family members dying.
Mm.
And I just, you know, when you start asking, you know, when you're a good salesman, it starts with good questions.
Yes, yes.
And so you start asking these questions, and if your main goal is to sell them something, then you're going to miss what they're saying. But if your main goal is to connect them with God, then, and I just remember over and over again talking to these people and being like, wow, God, you're bringing this person in my life and going through this incredible hardship and tragedy in the name of they need a mattress, but really, just like you,
yes,
they need drugs, exactly. But really they need Jesus.
Exactly.
And then from their point of view, they're thinking, all I wanted was a mattress. Yeah. But, no, but here's a man who gave me insight into what life is really about.
Wow. Well, it's like the woman at the well.
Yeah.
She thought she was coming for water, but got the living water.
Same thing, exactly.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So Fred, tell me how things developed with your, you know, architecture. You kind of described a situation where you were doing, you know, ministry, mission work, but you weren't doing architecture and you missed that. And then you went back to architecture and you missed missions work. And did God eventually combine the two? Like what happened?
Well, as I mentioned before, when I first went to Greece, I was teaching English in a language school because, first of all, we didn't think we were going to stay. We were waiting for Anastasia to finish her studies, and then we'd move here, which is just because that's what you do. You move to the husband's country, we thought. So we began to look into that, but then we saw opportunities for both of us. So I didn't want to work for some American company and never learn the language or anything, learn the culture. So teaching English was a great place to learn the culture because you're talking to the students about day-to-day things. And then I began to want to work in architecture. So as I was preparing my resume, one of my students, I had a class with adults, he said, didn't you say you had studied architecture? I said, yeah. He said, wouldn't you like to work in architecture? Of course I would. He said, well, one of my colleagues' wife is an architect. She's looking for a draftsman. So before I could even finish putting together my resume, I talked to her. She hired me.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then while that happened, while that was going on, working for her, we knew the people that were teaching at the Greek Bible College in Greece that our mission had started many years earlier. And I was with some other people helping one of them move, one of the missionaries move, and met a guy I had never met before. I call him Bob because that's his name. So
he said, good choice.
Yeah, yeah, he answers. So he said to me, what do you do? I said, I'm an architect. He said, oh, I may need your help one day. It turned out the buildings they were in were very old, run down. It wasn't worth trying to fix them. They need new plumbing, new electrical, everything. So they wanted to get some land and design new buildings. So he and I talked over the period of several months, and he ended up hiring me to work to design this project. It was two buildings. And then while I was, that was being built and I was supervising the construction, one of the other people with the mission, a woman who had come to her with her husband to Greece in 1966 to start the Bible school, she said, "Oh, there's a prayer request with our mission for an architect." I thought, well, that's weird. Why would a mission have an architect? It turned out they did have this department, that they was started by two people, one who had a background in construction, another who had a background in interior design. And they had a vision to start a ministry where they would do the architectural design for Christian ministries throughout Europe and then bring volunteers from usually from the U.S. back then to actually build to some of the construction.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Either for those projects or just a church or a camp or a Bible school that needs painting or something, bring volunteers to come and do that. So I looked into it, and this fellow who had started this ministry, he was Europe director at the time. He was going to come to Greece to look at the progress on the Bible school buildings. And I wrote to him back then. You probably don't remember. We used to take a thing called paper and you'd write words on it with a, what was it called? A pen. And you put it in something all folded up and you take it to a special building where you'd pay to have them send it to another, well, even another country.
What a foreign concept.
So, yeah, yeah. So I did that. And he said he would be in Greece in a month, and we could talk about this. Well, it was a long.
Was it a pigeon? Did you send it by pigeon carrier?
I don't know. You just kind of put it in this metal box, and then hoped it would get to where it was supposed to go. You put like the address, the other person's house. You know, like you'd put in Google Maps. Same kind of thing. It was kind of like Google Maps on paper So anyway, so he said he'd be there in a month. It was the longest month of my life waiting for this guy to come so we could talk about it. And we talked, and then eventually I was able to join the mission. I had started my own office, my own practice as an architect by then, so I decided to work half-time on my own to get more experience and half-time with the mission because they didn't really have work full-time back then for me. And did that for the first 12 years, started that in 1995. And in 2007, by then another architect who'd come along was also working with the mission with me. And 2007, it seemed like the Lord was calling me to shut down my practice and work full-time with the mission. And another interesting coincidence, at the same time, this other guy had decided the Lord was calling him to leave the mission completely and move to the U.S. So we got together. He was living in Germany where the mission Europe office is, and we would get together once a year to kind of talk about strategy and the next year, plans for the next year. And we sat down for coffee, and he said, "Before we talk about anything, I need to tell you that I'm leaving the mission." I said, "Well, that's interesting. Before we talk, I need to tell you that I'm going full-time with the mission." So another way the Lord just...
And you're like, conversation done.
Yeah, so what do we do now? Yeah, I'm here for 4 days. What are we going to do? No, but...
Fred, yeah. I have to ask you... So, you know, I think architect... I'm thinking like earning potential, mm-hmm. architect versus missionary. Mm. And, you know, I'm wondering, was that ever an impedance to you? Like thinking through, like you could have been more monetarily successful if you just went full bore with your own practice. Like, was that ever a thing on your radar? Or did you just never, ever worry about money? Or I'm just curious if, and you can just decline to answer. I'll edit this part out if you don't want to talk about it.
No. Well, you know, it's amazing. Anastasia and I are from completely different places, cultures, everything, but we're so similar in so many things. And one of them is money. And of course, that's very important in a married couple to have the same thinking about money. And we've always felt that we want enough to live on. We don't need the big house, the big fancy car, any of that. So I was doing pretty well as an architect, and the Lord brought some really good projects along. I did a lot of work for the U.S. Embassy in Athens, and one project in particular was very lucrative. So, and actually, when I decided to join the mission, it wasn't an issue. But then when I wanted to go full-time with the mission, we were both kind of wondering, how is this going to work with financial support and everything? And then Anastasia was the one. She's a very wise person. She said, you know...
Yes, me.
You're the one, yes. She said one day, you know, if you're a missionary, Christian worker, depending on God for financial support, Or you're an average person working in an office and getting a salary, you're just as dependent on God in both places. So there's no difference.
That's actually kind of, that's pretty true.
And a lot of people don't understand that.
The rest of it is sort of, it's like a fallacy to think that we have control over our, that's interesting. Yeah.
And I always tell people when they are thinking about going into full-time ministry and thinking about raising support, and I say, oh, I can't do that. It's so difficult. And I don't want to beg for money. I say, if you do not do that, you will be missing out on so many blessings.
Mm.
We have been blessed so much by people all these years, people who pray for us, people give sacrificially. We have seen miracles. We have seen people we never thought would be interested enough to actually give financially or to pray for us, and they do. And a story of one of my coworkers, I call him Kim because...
That's his name is Kim.
Yes, very good. You're catching on.
Does he know Bob?
He does know Bob. Yeah, Kim and Bob.
Figured.
Yeah, I try to keep him straight. You know, anyway, one time I was with him and he had, he was opening the mail and there was a bill for, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars. Because for dental work he had had to have done, had to have the front teeth replaced. And he was thinking, oh my gosh, where are we going to get this money? Well, in the same stack of mail, it was something like $2,100, I don't know. There was a check from a couple saying, we don't know why we're sending this to you, but God led us to send you a check for $2,100.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, I'm talking about a confirmation. We have just seen God's provision in so many different ways. So many ways. And a lot of that through the pharmacy and also through the money that people give. So
that's incredible.
Long answer to a question. But,
no, but I have to tell something. The important thing when you're in the mission is not only the fact that you need the money. This is the Lord can provide in any way. Any way. It's the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are doing something and the God's hand is not there, it has no value at all.
I would say you can be getting $1 million a month in donations, but if people are not praying, it's wasted.
Yes, it is.
The money doesn't make the difference. The money helps pay expenses. It's a practical need, but what is really needed, what leads to results is prayer.
I remember as a little kid, you know, I grew up a pastor's kid.
Mm.
And being a pastor's kid, you can develop some cynicism. And I remember missionaries coming to our church and talking about, you know, they'd show the old school slideshows.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, you know, the African bullfrog and you know, all that kind of stuff. And they would always get to that point where they say, you know, we want, you know, we need financial support, but we really want your prayer. And as a cynical kid growing up, I remember thinking, they don't really need the prayer.
Mm.
They
the
just
same.
Want the money.
Yeah.
No.
So you would say to that cynical kid, wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's like the story of a man sitting in the back of the church, you're taking an offering for missions. And the plate comes around to him and he says, what's this for? It's for missions. He says, that's just a waste of time. So the guy gives him the plate and says, why don't you take some? It's for the pagans anyway.
Wow. But, so if people want to get involved with what you guys are doing or just kind of be partnering with you here, want to pray for you, want to interact with you, they're going to have an opportunity to do that when you're here with us. November 5th, I believe it
That's
is,
right? Yeah.
But also, how would they get involved more in information about what you guys are doing?
Well, one way would be we send out a newsletter every 2 months, kind of give an update on what we're doing. We include prayer requests, so we'd be thrilled if they wanted to receive that. We send it by email. So that'd be the easiest way.
Yeah.
You know, or just write to us and we can say how things are going. We don't do a regular podcast. Those are kind of weird anyway. So.
No. I'm deleting that.
Yeah. So that's where we let people know about what's happening.
So before you guys go, what is, can you guys tell me something that currently you see God doing or that you're hoping God will do that you're really excited about?
For me, this year, it was the fact that I had problems with my assistants, one leaving, the other one going, coming back, forward, all of these things. And I was thinking, Lord, why this happens? Why do you allow this to happen? And going through so much pain. But in the same way, the only thing that came out of this is that all of these girls that they left and another one that came, they heard about the Lord. And that's the most important thing for me.
Yeah, I'm curious what your assistants think when they see you doing consults with your clients and telling them about Jesus.
Oh, you know, all my assistants hear from me every day about the Lord. And constantly. And only that. Whenever I have one of the assistants that is the longest one that stays with me in the pharmacy, and it's almost 16 years, that whenever a customer comes that has problems, like somebody dies from the family, himself has cancer, I don't know, something like that, very, very, something very, she says to me, I will take care of the rest of the families. Go in the back and sit with this guy and talk to him about the Lord and the, and give him the speranza,
how you say? Hope.
The hope that the Lord gives. Do that. Go in the back. So that's what my assistant thinks.
That's amazing. Yes. I love that.
Wow.
And sometimes they listen to the Bible, you know, spoken either from an app or the internet. But the other thing is that, at the risk of offending anybody, Greeks are not known for being the employers that treat people well. Mm. She treats them, her assistants, very well. Everything by the book, legally, all the health insurance payments, everything, treat with respect. If they need time off, she will give it to them, so they understand. And even when we had the very bad economic crisis several years ago, she got a call from our accountant who said, you know, the government sets everybody's salary. So they're all set by law based on various criteria. And the accountant called and said, you can lower your assistant's salaries if you want by law. And she had it on speakerphone, and so they could all hear. And she said, no, I'm not going to lower their salaries. Because they were all very, very anxious.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
She said, they work hard. They do a good job. I'm not going to do this to them.
And if the Lord wants me to have less money from this, it's okay. They need the money, and I will do with less.
Wow. I love it. Your guys' trust is inspiring.
Mm. He's proven it.
Well, guys, thank you for spending time with us and for going on our different rabbit trails. And I'm excited for what you guys are doing and what God's going to do through you. So,
well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's great to be with you both.